From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If you like board games, card games, or role-playing games, and you enjoy enjoying them while enjoying wearing a wizard's hat or dressing up as an elf, we won't judge you. Especially if it's one of those sexy elves. Because this is The Dice Men Cometh, and that's the sort of crap we talk about. My name's Trent, and that is Mark. Good evening.
Good evening, Trent. You had a good week?
Look, it's been fine. I've been a crap day today. I've dragged myself off my deathbed to be in here, because that's how much I love it.
Oh, well, we have got almost an hour of champagne radio for the listener tonight. We're going to talk about Kickstarter. We're going to talk about the baby of Kickstarter, the game that started it all, Alien Frontiers. We've got an interview with an Australian board gaming celebrity, the man known as Universal Head.
Nice bloke.
And we're going to talk about some party games. I think you've been waiting 3 weeks to hear about these party games, but it's going to be worth it. Trust me, it's going to be worth it.
And to kick everything off on a really big, fat, fist-pumping note, I'm going to start the show with a history lesson. Now, to explain, there is metal and there is not metal. Are you paying attention?
Yes.
There is false metal and there is true metal.
Ooh.
False metal is not metal, but occasionally not metal can be
metal.
You with me?
I think so.
Such is the case back in 1982 for this one, Zeppelin. Zeppelin, The Immigrant Song.
Ah!
And we played that one because you're a Zeppelin fan.
I am.
You're of that age.
Yes.
Zeppelin, old. They're re-releasing newly remastered versions of all their albums with all previously unheard studio material.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like, sketches of songs and stuff, different versions of Whole Lotta Love.
Fantastic.
And all that sort of thing. They start coming out in the next couple of weeks. I'm excited! Oh boy, that cleared the cobwebs out. I've cancelled game night tonight because I'm not feeling 100%. I do want to get an early night, but we've been okay. It's been okay over the last couple of weeks. We've played a few things.
Yeah,
so
we've got a bit in.
What have we been playing lately?
Look, I at a recent event of the Hobart Games Society, you might be surprised to know that I turn up there occasionally. I played a little game that I hadn't played for quite some time, actually, by a company called Looney Labs, who are best known for their Flux games.
Oh, really?
And also for the Ice House Pyramids that you sort of play this abstract game with. Anyway, a game called Are You the Traitor?
Okay, this is a fairly light kind
of
a card
game. Yeah,
it is.
It's a sort of a...
with, oddly enough, a traitor mechanic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's sort of a new take on the werewolf game, where there's no player elimination, and you play a number of rounds, where the rounds can be as short as 30 seconds. So you have some hidden roles. You basically have two teams, a good team and an evil team. On both teams, you've got wizards, so you've got good wizards and evil wizards. On the good team, you've got a guy called a keyholder, and everyone knows who the keyholder is, except the wizards, good and evil. You've also got guards.
A gate master? No, wait, hang on, I'm thinking of Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
go on.
You've also got guards who are on the good team. And then on the evil team, you've got one or two traitors and the evil wizards. So the evil wizard is trying to get the key holder, and the key holder is trying to get the key to the good wizard. But the key holder doesn't know. He knows who the wizards are, but he doesn't know which ones are good or evil. So you're basically trying to find out who each other are.
Is it okay if while you're talking, I'm just thinking about Sigourney Weaver?
Yes, okay.
Go on.
And so basically a round ends when someone points to someone else and says, stop. Now, an evil wizard could point to the key holder and say, stop, or the person they think is a key holder. The key holder could point to the good wizard and say, stop. The guards could point to the traitor and say, stop. So the round can end really quickly. Or you can sit there saying, what are you again? Hands up all the guards. Are you a good wizard or an evil wizard? I'm always a good wizard. And so there's a lot of byplay in the group, but it happens really quickly. There's no player elimination. At the end of the mini round, if you like, whichever team won, the good or the evil team, they get some cards from this deck which are jewels, with a value anywhere between 0 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the first person to get 10 points worth of jewels is the winner of the game. So it can play over 2, 3, 4 rounds. But it generally only, that whole thing will only take about half an hour, and you can play up to 10.
This sounds like a lot of shouting. Is that good?
It can be. It's funny, because it can often be people just sitting there staring across the table at someone, trying to make them flinch, and not much is said at all. And other times it can be, hang on, I saw him, look, and... Yeah, look, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And as I said, you know, werewolf can take a long time.
It can.
Werewolf has player elimination, where people then, if they get killed early, have to sit around and watch the game pan out. Whereas this, everyone's involved in every round. At the end of each sort of mini round, you get new cards again. So you might be the traitor one time and a guard the next time. Yeah, it was fun. Looney Labs, Are You the Traitor? Plays 4 to 10. And I liked it. One of those good start of the night, end of the night type games.
Well, I got to play with my birthday present.
Oh.
If you can recall, I was purchased an expansion for Flashpoint Fire Rescue, which is the firefighting co-op game that's as good for a family with young kids as it is for hardcore gamers, because it scales up and down in a really, really clever way. Just very quickly, there's a map of a building. There's fire represented by little circular tiles that spread out very quickly with a neat little explosion mechanic. There's victims. Every firefighter's got a special power. There's hazmats.
Cats and dogs to rescue.
Lying. That's right. The hazmats explode, burning up the cats and dogs, except for the rescue dog, which was part of the expansion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The plastic dog.
Yeah, the veteran and the rescue dog.
What does the veteran do?
He can avoid being knocked out by the fire, and if you're in his vicinity, he kind of, you know, leans over and helps you out, you know. Just, you know, watch your feet, rookie. That kind of thing.
And Sam, so, voiced by Sam Shepard.
Absolutely, yeah. And so he sort of helps people out. The dog is very different, and someone has to play the dog full time. The dog can go in to the building and drag people out. The dog can't fight the fire. The dog can't drive the ambulance.
What's that, Lassie? You want the fire engine to drive around the corner?
The dog can't perform first aid. So there's all those sort of fairly logical sort of limitations. But the dog can go in and drag a victim out because they get 12 action points to do it.
I was going to say, I bet they get a lot of movement.
Yeah, exactly. And they can also sort of squeeze through holes in damaged parts of the walls and everything. So, look, it's a great little addition. It is a lot of fun, but it didn't help. We still got creamed. And this is the thing. We're playing this at the maximum difficulty setting. We thought, hey, we're all seasoned gamers.
Hey, we got a dog.
Yeah, there's six of us. We've got a dog and the veteran. We'll be fine. Set that sucker to maximum. And we just got creamed. We're absolutely kidding ourselves. This is a really tough game if you play it up on the hardest. I think it's called the...
arsonist level?
Yeah, it's something like that.
The veteran didn't turn out to be an arsonist, did he?
But no, there's no traitor mechanic, thankfully. Actually, hey, that's a great idea! A traitor mechanic in Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
Yeah, that's right, the guy who's going around lighting fires behind you.
Someone create
Backdraft.
That as a fan-made expansion and upload that to Board Game Geek. I want to play that next week. it's been another great addition to an endlessly replayable favourite, that's Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
Oh, fantastic. Look, we've obviously got lots of great stuff coming up, but next... Trent spoke to, as we said, an Australian board gaming celebrity, Universal Head, he's universally known as. This is the guy who has done so many things in the board gaming world. I remember one of the first games I ever got, Arkham Horror. I downloaded this absolutely amazing cheat sheet, rules, manifesto, designed, looked like it had been designed by the same people who designed the game. It was
exactly.
So professional.
Exactly, yeah.
And he's the guy. He's been around for years.
Well, one of our favourite subjects on this show is craply written rule books.
Yes. Are you listening, Fantasy Flight?
And this
I'm looking
guy,
at you.
Universal Head, has a solution. We'll talk to him next. Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh here and The Evening Dolls there. I like the one that's called Precious Time, and before that, something else that made me want to slip my wrists. Mark.
Trent, something I forgot to tell the listeners last week, just before we listened to the ubiquitous Universal Head.
Oh.
There have been 35 winners of the Spiel des Jahres in the German Game of the Year. We had a little bit of a pop quiz last week, as I had the list of them with me. And as I looked through them, what I realised was I had played 21 of the 35 German games of the year. Then I asked you to indicate which of these games you had played, Trent. Do you remember how many of the 35 games of the year you had played?
I think I could count them on one hand.
One hand plus three fingers.
Right.
Eight. 8 out of 35. So I say to you, sir, you are criminally deficient in the playing of Euro games.
Well, maybe if they made some good ones. Actually, I'll come back at you with a Euro that I'm desperate to play at Bordercon. I'll tell you about that in just a sec. But
this week, Trent spoke to our board game celebrity from across the pond, Universal Hid.
Coming to us live from a secret chamber somewhere in the Esoteric Order of Gamers headquarters, Peter Gifford, a.k.a. Universal Head. Mr. Head, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Trent.
Please explain for us, and for anyone who doesn't know, what is it exactly that you do that has made you so damn popular and in such high demand to appear on all sorts of gaming podcasts?
High demand. My goodness. Well, I make rules summaries is one of the main things I do, and I seem to be getting pretty well known for it, probably because I've made so many. I've made something in the order of 213, I think we're up to. And I put them all on my website, the Esoteric Order of Gamers, and not only rules summaries, but videos and articles and foam core box insert plans and lots of stuff to do with gaming, which is my favourite hobby, obviously.
Your motto is design that works, which I love. Now, you are a graphic designer professionally, is that correct?
I am, yes. Universal Head as a company has been going since 1994. So I cannot remember not working for myself. It was a long, long time ago that I ever worked for anyone else. But I do some board game work, obviously. There's some games I've done the design on. Tales of the Arabian Nights, Aztlan, the new version of Incognito by Ares Games. So I do those occasionally, and I've also done just rule books occasionally as well. And I love doing that kind of work, but unfortunately, budgets aren't as high as normal corporate work, so I can't do it all the time. I'd do it all the time if I could.
Graphic design is really at the heart of good board gaming, would you agree?
Well, there are two aspects. Obviously, the design is vitally important, the mechanics, all that kind of thing, but you can have the best mechanics and the best design in the world, and if it isn't translated well in a way that players can use it and enjoy it, then it's pretty useless. It's got to be well designed. And when I say design that works, that's my motto for all graphic design. I think graphic design should be functional and beautiful.
And look, I think there's something inherently tactile and analog, and the aesthetics of a good game, they're right there in front of you. You can touch it, you can smell the ink. But at the same time, I think a lot of people just sort of have a look at things. They go, yeah, the art's nice, and maybe they don't think about it beyond that. But it's got to be more than just nice art. Graphic design means, you know, it's got to actually improve the functionality of the game.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. And I love that tactile aspect to gaming. I love it. I love ripping off the shrink wrap and smelling the ink, as you say, and all the pieces. And I just think that's great. I mean, it's all part of the total immersion that you get into a board game. But then you can have that completely thrown out by looking at some card that you can't read because it's in four-point reversed-out text with a white drop shadow behind it or something, and that ruins the whole feel of the game.
It absolutely astounds me that so many game designers completely poleaxe themselves with shitty design.
Wow.
I mean, what are some of the worst rule books that you've come across? Some of the worst.
I don't want to mention too many terrible rule books and everything. Some are terrible. You know, for example, Zpocalypse, or as we call it, Zpocalypse, they had an atrocious manual. But, you know, I talked to the guy, and he was a lovely bloke, and they love their game, and they love gaming, and they got me to redesign and rewrite the rule book. So they were obviously dedicated to doing a good job. It's just like many graphic designers who do games, they don't have the experience to do a really good job. They've got the passion, and they're really excited about it. But, you know, I've been doing graphic design for, you know, more than 25 years, so I've got a bit of experience.
So you're obviously a long-time gamer who's passionate about his hobby.
Yeah.
What games are you playing now? What are some of your favourites? Tell us.
At the moment, I've been spending a lot of time with Dead Zone by Mantic Games. And I've done 5 videos on how to build and paint the miniatures and the terrain. And I'm just about this week to release 2 videos of a play session I had with my best gaming mate, Will, who I've played games with for almost 30 years, horrifyingly enough. And now I moved to New Zealand. He comes out here quite a lot to have a bit of a holiday, and we have a 4 days of solid gaming, as well as some healthy outdoor activities as well, but we game a lot. What else have I been doing? War of the Ring is one of my all-time favourites. We love getting a game for that.
Ooh.
I just think it's absolutely brilliant. It just has a fantastic macro view of a war game and also the micro view of the characters and taking the ring
now,
to order and everything.
Which version of that are you playing, though?
Version 2, but I do have the collector's edition. Unfortunately, it's in storage, which is very sad because I love my collector's edition. It's my prized possession.
How do you actually go about putting these things together, these tip sheets?
The sheets, well...
You're using the Adobe Creative Suite. You're using Illustrator, Photoshop, and InDesign, yeah?
Yes, yes. I'd love to be using something apart from Adobe, but unfortunately they've forced us all into the use of their tools and they have a monopoly and all the rest of it, but we won't go there.
You're doing these high-res scans of the graphics from the rule books, and how are you pulling the text off those scans just so you're left with the background?
More often
and
these days,
sort of...
I usually manage to get a hold of the PDF because they all release the PDFs as well online, and I can just copy the text from that, and I'll copy the text and then I'll go through in several passes refining it, cutting out all the extraneous repetition and junk and rewording sentences to be as short and succinct as possible. And then after I've done that, I mean, there's quite a long process where I actually get it to fit in the space that I've given myself that's appropriate. If you look at all my summaries, you'll see that every single column of every text lines up perfectly at the bottom. That doesn't happen overnight. That takes a lot of effort.
Have you ever run into any problems with copyright?
No, I haven't, thankfully. Publishers, I think, I'm hoping that they recognise that I'm doing them a service. I'm not charging for anything. I've got a donate button on my website for server fees and things, but I don't charge anything, so I'm not making any money out of it. And I talk to most of them. I mean, a lot of them I have talks to. Some of them are kind enough to send me a game now and again. If they know about me at all, they know that, I'm probably doing a decent job and not charging anything, and it's good for their games.
Look, Peter, I could probably talk to you all night, but we are running out of time, and I wanted to sort of get into some foam core stuff because I've recently discovered the wonders of foam core myself, making an insert for my Netrunner box, but I might have to save that conversation for another time, because what I really wanted to ask about on your website, you're painting your Dead Zone miniatures, as you've mentioned, and they look fantastic.
Okay.
Now, look, I've never painted, but I'm getting to the point now where I'm pimping my board games, I'm making my inserts. I want to start painting some of my pieces in my board games, like the little guys in Flashpoint Fire Rescue and that kind of thing. Where do I start? Do I need to buy some kind of air-powered spray gun, or can What do I do?
Well, the first thing to get over is that it's hard. It's not hard at all. It takes
experience. Oh, come on! It takes years of practice. You've been doing it for a lifetime.
I have, but everybody starts. And one of the great things about the website is that I get feedback from people straight away. And a lot of people have said, "Oh, I've watched your video on how to paint miniatures, and I finally gave it a go. And actually, it's not as hard as I thought." And that's really satisfying because, you're getting people into something which is a really enjoyable hobby that they were scared of. And I think, as someone mentioned, a lot of the videos online are by really professional painters and they're showing advanced techniques. And I'm just trying to show stuff which is good for board gaming and basic miniature games, and showing basic techniques so you can paint them up quickly, get them on the table and enjoy playing the game.
And you can see all these tips for yourself and watch the videos and read all about it on the Esoteric Order of Gamers, www.orderofgamers.com. Peter Gifford, a.k.a. Universal Head, been awesome to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Trang.
You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. That was I Am I Who Am I, not
what?
Who Am I.
What?
Or Will I Am. I am who am I with their song U2. They've even spelled it out for me here on the computer so I can get it right. Just some nice chilled beats to lead us into our next little discussion about one of the babies of Kickstarter, really.
Yeah, now look, just before we get into that, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends at BorderCon in Albury, coming up in the first weekend of June, the Queen's Birthday long weekend. The Dice Men Cometh are going.
We have the Tasmanian contingent of six, double what we had last time.
And if anyone's listening on the podcast or something, and you know, thinking about what games to bring, I do have a sort of short list of games I'm looking to play at BorderCon, and there's a Euro at the top of that list. Thank you very much.
Right, okay.
I do resemble the remark that you made about my interest in Euros, but there's a game called Francis Drake.
Oh, yeah.
Which just came out last year, getting very, very good reviews. Elizabethan exploration and exploitation of the Aztecs in a sort of resource management race, which is apparently, it looks great too.
Oh, cool. Well, speaking of Francis Drake, I am hoping to get another game of either Here I Stand or Virgin Queen in.
Oh, my God, the Wars of the Reformation.
Yes, that's right.
You thought they were boring and tedious the first time you lived through them. Other things I'm looking forward to, Kemet, the Egyptian mythical warfare game.
It's not easy being green.
Would like to play Rampage.
Oh, yeah.
The Monster Stomper.
I did see that in our friendly local game store today. I thought very seriously about picking it up.
But I think probably what I'm going to do is I'll just wait until everyone's maybe, you know, had a few drinks late in the night. And I might see who wants to play a game of Fiasco.
Excellent. Sounds great. So, look, let's talk about Alien Frontiers.
Yes, we asked you what you wanted to hear on the show, and you said more full reviews of board games, so we thought, hey, why not? Let's start with Alien Frontiers, because it's a particularly important one, given that it was the first, wasn't the first board game on Kickstarter, but it was the first really big hit.
Yeah, really successful, where a company that had not done anything before put this game on Kickstarter. It was way overfunded, and it's been brilliantly successful. In fact, so successful, they do have on Kickstarter at the moment the fourth edition of this game.
It's finished, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Wrapped up last year. $151,837.
Wow.
They managed to make it. They were only asking for five.
Yeah, oh, wow.
It's a little misleading.
Let's look at this in a little bit of detail. So the year's 2010. Clever Mojo Games came out with a clever name, Alien Frontiers. They haven't really done anything else since. They had a game called Ogre Castle. Meh. Sunrise City, which is a bit of a sort of Carcassonne-y type thing in the modern world. But the Alien Frontiers, it's a worker placement game and an area control game. And the beautiful thing that I love about this game, your workers, instead of being meeples, your workers are dice. And your dice are spaceships, or your spaceships are dice that are your workers. And so you are rolling your dice and then putting them on spots of the board. Some of these are in orbit around a planet, and some of these are on the actual planet themselves.
Yeah, it's all themed around the exploration and colonization of an alien world.
Yeah, and the absolutely beautiful graphic design that it has harkens back very much to the 1950s classic sci-fi look.
Yeah, yeah, and you've actually got areas on the board that are called Asimov Valley or Heinlein Plains, I think, is another one. There's even a reference to Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, there's no area on the board named after Philip K. Dick. I'll just leave that with you for a moment.
So this is for ages 13 and up. It plays 2 to 4 players, although if you add one of the quite a number of expansions, it will take it to 5, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, we won't talk about that. Trent's going to talk about some of the expansions in a minute, but as I said, you're rolling your dice. You start off with 3 dice, which are your spaceships, which are your workers, and you're rolling your dice to gather resources. Does this sound familiar? To change your dice to get more dice, so you're building spaceships, and then to colonize the planet. And these various different areas on the planet, they give you special abilities. Now, there's even one that has an artifact spaceship left behind by a previously extinct race.
Just like at the start of Alien, but without the facehuggers.
That's right. That you can then use as your dice. But the thing is, you don't actually gain control of that area. You just have the majority. If someone else goes in there and you no longer have the majority, then you lose that ability. So there's the area control bit happening down on the planet in the various spaces, and there's the growing your dice pool to a maximum of 6 dice, where you start from 3. And the winner of the game, it's to a certain number of points. Not really important, but
actually, it's to the last player to, or the first player to put down their last colony.
That's right.
Yeah. and whatever the points are at the time. If we're making it sound complicated, it's not.
No.
I think that's been part of the appeal of this, why it's been such a big hit. It takes 5 minutes to learn.
Yeah, it's really easy to explain. Yeah. And the way that the graphic design of the board really lends itself to explaining and to actually looking on the board and saying, oh, I know what that space does and I know how to get that space.
It's not really a game you strategize, though, is it?
Look, I guess there are some levels of strategy in terms of do I race to get to my six dice really quickly, or do I race to get down onto the planet really quickly and get control of that artifact spaceship, or do I maybe, and maybe it's more tactical than strategic, do I try and get some of those alien technology cards, which give me sort of added bonuses, because you can buy these alien technology cards and they give you added bonuses. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another route you could take, but you're right. Maybe it's more tactical decision making and less strategic.
And look, this is my big criticism about this game, and I am nitpicking because I want to put it out there that this game is a lot of fun, but there's really no way of actually planning ahead while it's not your go. There is a lot of player downtime in this because the first thing you do when it's your go is you pick up your ships and you roll your dice, and then you've got to figure out based on the combinations that you've rolled where you can place those dice because only certain values can go in certain spots.
Yes.
So it's impossible to plan ahead. You might know that you want to go somewhere, but you might not roll the dice that you need.
Yeah, there is a little bit of planning ahead in terms of as you roll your dice and put them on the spaces, those spaces are then filled up and they don't go again until it comes back around to your turn. So you can tell where the empty spots are going to be and where there's not going to be any empty spots when it gets to your turn.
It's more of a game of take that rather than plan ahead. It's more about knocking your opponents out, I suppose, at the time.
Yeah, or looking at what could be really, really attractive to them, maybe not so attractive to you, but I can't afford to let Trent go to that spot because he's going to totally get ahead, so I'm going to take that out. I'm going to put a, the resource where you've got to put a higher dice than the previous one that's there. So you put a six there, you totally screw everyone over because they have to put sixes there and that's all that works.
That's the lunar mine, and that's one of the most hotly contested spots on there, as opposed to something like the colony launcher, I think it's called, which is where you can put all your spare dice.
Yeah, the extra bits,
At the end, you know, eventually, slowly build a colony and put it down.
Or the solar harvester, where you're harvesting the solar energy and there's always way too much
solar energy, but that's where you use the. There's a converter, and look, okay, we're getting into some real nitty gritty there. I did want to talk about some of the expansions, and it does tap into that criticism I've got about the analysis paralysis and the player downtime because the factions expansion adds a fifth player to it. There's another expansion which is in theory going to add a sixth player to it, and I would not recommend doing either of those things. Stick with four. That's the sweet spot. That's about as long as you're really prepared to wait, particularly if you're playing with someone who gets that dreaded AP. Other good things about the factions expansion, though, every player gets their own special ability and an additional little board, which will add basically a spaceship, which gives them a special power that only they can use. But, everybody can use it, but they have to pay the price to place their dice in that particular spot. So that gives a lot more variety.
Yeah, I really like that expansion, not from the terms of adding a fifth player, but adding those faction boards gives a huge amount of variety and throws in a whole bunch of different things in the mix.
Yeah, because there's a drafting mechanism because it's always something different. And there's also a hell of a lot more of the alien tech cards in that expansion.
That's right.
And they really can turn the game, particularly seeing as most of them actually have two uses. You know, there's a use that's built into the card that the owner gets a special power, but there's also burning the card for an even stronger effect. And that is, I find most players don't use that enough. They really are quite disposable and give you some big, big benefits and really swing the game around. The other expansion, as part of the Kickstarter 4th edition reissue of this, there's a print and play expansion for Alien Frontiers included, which is called Outer Belt. And I think this may be getting a proper release later in the year. So it adds an additional sideboard with asteroids on it, and you can dock on those for even more stuff, and I think that's coming out later this year.
Okay.
But like I said, six player, no, not a good look. Unless we could think of some way of mixing it up and actually interfering with other people's
or having goes. Two people go at the same time, even something like that.
If you're interested in Alien Frontiers, if you're a fan of that kind of Golden Age sci-fi artwork, and you know, if you're looking for something that's not too deep, because it is a fairly light experience, before you shell out the $60-$70 or more, I'm not even sure what the retail price is that you're going to pay for this, try it on the iPad.
Yes, that's right.
The app is only $6.50. Mm. Okay, so try that out. If you like the look of it, go and get yourself the board game.
Okay, so we are going to talk about more of our love for Kickstarter in a minute, but before we do that, we're going to talk about our kickstarting our love.
Kickstart My Love by Example. Apparently, I honestly wouldn't know. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. We're going to give a shout out to the Edge Radio crew who are currently at the Homebrewed Winter Program Schedule Launch Party. Dice Men Cometh is very, very happy and indeed proud to be a part of the winter program. We are renewed for another 6 months,
we're
baby.
We're back.
And I'm quite sure that they are playing Edge Radio loud and proud at the launch party, and that you guys are really going off listening to a show about board games. Or maybe not. They've got some bands there. Yeah. Now, we also promised this show to talk a little bit about some current stuff that's happening on Kickstarter. Alien Frontiers, the one that sort of started it all. We're going to get Mark to give us a bit of a roundup of some current projects that may be worth backing on Kickstarter. You've got theme music. I thought I was going to do your theme music.
No, I don't need you.
You were doing my theme music for
You can voice over it if you like, but this is just worth listening to.
And now it's time to kickstart your heart with Mark from the Dice Men Cometh all over your face and right down your uniform. Here it is, baby.
Whoa, how can I follow an intro like that?
Probably not with the single most predictable Kickstarter themed song. There are undiscovered tribes in the Amazon that knew you were going to play this song, Mark. Okay, that's enough. Come on. Enough 80s.
Kickstart my heart, baby. How many songs out there are there with the word Kickstart in them? That was two of them just then.
Clearly not enough.
Here we go. Some Kickstarter news. Just a quick roundup of a couple of things we talked about previously. Great news for a group from Brisbane who had the Rise to Power city building game. Mm-hmm. It got funded. Woohoo! 240% funded. Just finished yesterday.
This is a little bit of a sort of suburbia theme.
Yeah,
city
sort of like suburbia crossed with Race for the Galaxy is what I got out of it. And in fact, I've struck up a conversation with Alan, the designer of the game.
Have you made a friend?
Yeah.
Have you, Mark?
And we're going to have him on the show in a few weeks to talk to us about...
Well, we're putting all your friends on the show
the
now,
the perils of Kickstarter, particularly for an Australian audience. I also want to let you know that Choose Your Crew Rock Band was funded. It is funded.
That sounded interesting. That was where you were making up... you're putting a band on the road?
Yeah, band on the road with roadies and singers and drummers and everything. It's already 150% funded. It's still got another 2 days to go as of now.
Choose Your Crew.
Choose Your Crew Rock Band.
Okay.
Some more exciting news about...
Labyrinth Outbreak Dead of Winter.
It's 62% funded with 10 days to go. Now, this is the Zombie Hedge Maze live action role-playing.
Oh, right. That's what it's called. Okay.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
And finally, I've managed to work out that it's actually 90 minutes drive out of Melbourne, just north of Ballarat.
I'm impressed, Mark. Actual information.
Yeah, that's
right. This is great.
So if you are in the Melbourne vicinity and you're interested in this, it only costs, it's around $40-odd, I think, to sign up and be a player. There's only a certain number of spots available. And the actual zombie survival disaster experience is going to happen on the 7th of June, which is on the Queen's birthday, long weekend. We'll be in Bordercon.
Oh, my God. But that's not
necessarily
that far away.
Anyway, something to think about.
So it is an actual hedge maze.
It is. There is a hedge maze just to the north of Ballarat. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm scratching my head here because, look, I grew up in Melbourne, and anybody who was there in Melbourne in the early 80s might remember a location.
Cryle Castle,
just not too far from Sovereign Hill in Ballarat.
Went on a school trip there.
There was a concrete walled maze in that. The castle's still there. It might be privately owned now, though.
I think you're right, actually.
Yeah, maybe...
Anyway, look, let's get on. One of your favourite game companies, Trent, can you guess who they are?
No.
Steve Jackson Games.
Steve Jackson Games is a struggling game company that really needs to run a Kickstarter.
They really need to run a Kickstarter. And what they really need to do, they clearly need some more publicity around...
Munchkin. Oh, my God.
So they've launched Munchkin Bricks. Do you know what Munchkin Bricks is?
Is it Lego?
It's little weapons and items from the Munchkin game that you can use with your brick figures, not using any trademark names. It was funded in under 24 hours, and now it is way, way overfunded.
So hang on, is it a game?
No, it's weapons and items from Munchkin, like the chainsaw of two-handedness, the duck in the dungeon, all that sort of stuff.
Lego figures.
That you can use with your Lego and other brick-type toys.
That is the crappiest idea I have ever heard.
Oh, dear. It costs $20 to get 8 accessories, okay? Jeez. But wait, the best part is you get one exclusive Munchkin card with your brick Lego accessories, okay? Anyway, let's not dwell on it. Moving on.
Clearly, there are people with too much disposable income on the internet.
Knitted Nerd Dice Bags. Custom knitted dice bags.
Oh, now this has got me interested.
Yeah, this is... it's 92% funded with still 23 days to go. You need to contact the Knitted Nerd people if you want it shipped out of North America.
Right.
But they will do it, so you obviously have to discuss the cost with them. But they can make custom-made dice bags. They can make really simple ones, but there are dice bags on there shaped like sushi rolls. There's like Cthulhu dice bags.
Oh,
they knit them personally for you.
It's not just a pattern on a standard...
No. You can get custom-made knitted dice bags.
Shaped like theoretically anything.
Absolutely. A huge penis dice bag or whatever. Anyway, we've got to move on from that. North Star Games and their games evolution, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. It's 700% funded. You can see how these game companies that are struggling for cash really desperately need to get their games on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. It's still got 21 days to go. You can get it shipped to Oz for only an extra $20. We talked about Cards Against Humanity, and you said, well, if this game wasn't made, someone would need to make it. There's a game on Kickstarter called Dirty Rotten Apples,
right,
which is basically like apples to apples, but slightly risque.
So it's Cards
Falls
Against Humanity.
In between
yeah.
Cards Against Humanity and the original apples to apples. It's not quite as risque as Cards Against Humanity.
Well, I guess there's obviously a market for
it. Yeah, well, clearly, because it's 5% funded with only 5 days to go. So, it doesn't look much. Chop. A couple of miscellaneous Australian Kickstarters that are not necessarily related to games, but you could get into. Game of Thrones inspired dressing gowns.
Oh, fantastic.
You can get a Targaryen dressing gown, so which is like the blue of Dany.
Okay.
Or a Lannister dressing gown, which is like the sort of crimson blood red. $200 for the Targ, $221 for the Lanny. That's a local Australian Kickstarter, although it does need a bit of help if you want to get on and get your Game of Thrones dressing gowns.
Surely there's some kind of copyright restriction around. I mean, do they have the house crest?
No logos or anything. It's just the colours and the styling.
So it's just a coloured dressing gown.
Yeah, but with some styling as well. Check it out on Kickstarter, Game of Thrones inspired dressing gowns.
Is there a matching fez?
No, not as yet. There's an idea for a Kickstarter.
There's a
Game of Thrones inspired fezes. Get on that. And look, you know what I'm seeing on Kickstarter? I'm seeing a trend. Brisbane. Brisbane is a hotbed of Kickstarter activity.
Is that right?
Whether it's games, whether it's the interesting Kickstarter I talked about a couple of weeks ago with rope bunnies at the intersection of fashion and bondage. And now, Dr. Rees Diamonds. It's a 2015 cosplay calendar produced in Brisbane of 12 lovely young ladies who are going to be dressing up in Marvel-themed costumes to make a calendar.
I am not secretly interested in that at all. At all.
So, that's your Kickstarter roundup.
So, I mean, I'm just looking forward. I haven't seen the new X-Men film yet, and I'm just looking forward to seeing Ellen Page in that. But I don't think she gets too much latex on.
Look, I'm looking forward to it as well. I'm actually going to probably see it this weekend. But there you go. That's your Kickstarter roundup for this week.
Well, thank you. And I believe that's probably the show for this week. Another edition of the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. It's been fun. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Trent. And look, I want to personally apologise, actually.
It's about bloody time, too.
To all the people out there who have been waiting 3 weeks.
Not to me. Sorry, no. This is legitimate. Right.
No, this is a fair dinkum one. To the listener out there that's been waiting for 3 weeks to hear about party games, we've been recycling this topic every week. Trust me, we prepare it every week. It's on the agenda. We've just got so much to talk about. There's just so much happening in the world of board games at the moment. And look, let's just say party games, they're out there. There's some good ones. Time's Up Title Recall, Wits and Wages, Telestrations.
If you want us to talk about it some more, if there's something else you'd like us to talk about, hit us up on the Facebook page, Dice Men Cometh, and ask us a question. We're always happy to hear from anyone who takes the time to download this show or listen live. Thank you very much.
We would love your feedback. Please remember our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheDiceMenCometh. We're on iTunes.
You don't need to give out the internet address for Facebook. What are you? Is it still 1999 in your head or something?
I'm just letting people know.
I think we know how to find Facebook
that
now.
You need to put The Dice Men Cometh. That's the important bit.
You just Google your way there. Google looks after it all.
Hogs.org.au, which is the webpage of the Hobart Gaming Society. That's also where our RSS feed lives. If you're not on a iOS device and you'd like to listen, you can actually listen to it right on the website there. Can you believe it?
I love it when you talk like you sort of understand the technical side of it. It sounds so illicit. I'm getting quite excited.
Look, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to leave you for this week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Shout out to those Edge Radio guys partying on down at the Republic Bar. We've got a Tassie track here. I think it's about the two of us, Trent. It's by a Tassie act called Bart. It's called Full Grown Boy.
Yay!
See you later!
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.